medical choices may be those of false protection does not mean that they do not have this power to choose evil. Hence, their choices are moral choices. If you couldn't choose evil, you couldn't be a moral being, could you? Because you have no alternative.
Before we go ahead, and I realize that this is the first one of these I've ever sat in on, one question that I asked Bill on the way down here. This is by revelation. How and by whom?
Well, that's a good question. And I can't answer it. It's an old form of philosophy.
But you know.
No, I know more, but I don't know all. There's still some things I don't understand. I know many things that I promise not to discuss. But there are some things that I've got gaps in my, I have to theorize and try to bridge.
Then on that, you can't give me any help.
No, I can't, except that you can tell. I don't know the chemical formula for orange juice, but I like the taste. And I can validate it by the assimilability of the orange juice as well. I can say this, in my investigations, when I put on my gumshoe suit, one of the first things I said about the time is who's making what out of it. When I discovered it, as far as I can tell, no one is. That means something to me. It doesn't prove anything. The second test I applied to this, can you make it work in everyday life? Is it practical? Well, there's a lot of us that's way beyond that. Metaphysical, eschatological, and so forth. But at least those things which I can't apply to everyday living, to me are reasonable. I take them in with no intellectual nausea. You know, I don't have to do a lot of double talk. In the Song of Solomon, I don't have to etherealize it. And this is a song of a lovesick guy. Yeah.
Sure,
and I don't have to say this is man's love for the church.
And well done, too.
Awfully well done, yes. And my validation used to feel that way in springtime, too.
And so long ago, I don't remember.
But it only takes the man to protest too much. But where I can apply, it works. The most interesting test I've made of this is in part four. We were discussing this last night. I think in the harmony of the gospel, and part four is just substantial. This is much of it. It's the life and teachings of Jesus in detail. And of course, his childhood, I can't check on. Oh, it's very intriguing, sorry, highly believable. I enjoy it. I chuckle over parts of it. For example, the fact that he was the most inquisitive youngster in the synagogue school in Nazareth. The fact that he wasn't too well thought of by some of the parents of the college people. That's human nature, you know. His head-on clash with his father when he wanted to, when he observed the stadium of Petropolis, the Greek city. The only time he goes there was a bowling mouth. He didn't understand the antipathy between Hellenistic culture and Hebraic culture.
About that second point you just made.
Yeah.
I probably should take the time to do it, but my little 7-year-old, he's just 7 last week, Jan, in the first grade, a little girl came into her class. She was very pious. Her father was a missionary in the Pentecostal Holy Church.
This is pretty far gone.
He said to Jan, "What did your daddy do?" And well, my daddy is a ministry person in the church in Oklahoma City for 17 years. And he also was a guest lecturer for General Motors. Whereupon this little girl very piously said, well, Jan said to her, "What did your daddy do?" And the girl very piously, and she said, "Lord, he had opened it pretty well." He said, "My daddy works for Jesus." Whereupon Jan answered, "Well, my daddy works for Jesus too, but General Motors pays better."
I wonder if you can point out to Earl Alexander the place in here where it mentions that I think it is speaking on the core of destiny, and it says one to whom these papers.
Administration of it. John doesn't
know. Take the street bail. Take the street bail.
Yeah.
You know that.
That's special word on the step. Just to get this in proportion, in perspective, in Christ's domain, there are 10,000 systems like this. And there have been three rebellions.
How many?
10,000 systems. There have been three rebellions. This is rebellion number three, almost three. Christ himself was involved in two of the others. Because he's the soul here on earth, which is seventh, the soul. Six times he bestowed himself after the likeness of other orders of universe creatures. And his second bestowal was as a primary Lamanadec son, the successor of a rebellious system father.
Do you ever read that thing by Ibsen where he said, describes the crucifixion? He said, what if this is an event that took place 2,000 years ago, or what if he goes on from world to world, living and dying for the sins of his people?
Again, there's a lot of truth in it. A lot of truth. As the papers say, much of man's cosmic romancing may not be fact, but much of it may still be true. These papers make quite a differentiation between fact and truth.
But the papers do not claim utter authenticity.
No, I'll read you what they say about themselves. Where they discuss the limitations of revelation.
I'm asking too many questions.
No, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. The listener, you ask these questions and they're of interest to everyone.
By the way, just before we do that, one of my key problems, 1007,
yes, wonderful 07.
One of my key problems in religion. In the fact, and I've gotten in a lot of trouble because of this, that any concept or idea, if followed to fruition, does not end up in something practical for life. I am inclined to say, so what? This is the reason I am so weak on a belief in theology per se. Theology per se, as many ministers make their number one primary goal, an understanding of the Trinity or something like this, rather leaves me cold. Because I say, so what? What does it have to do with life here and now? How will it help people to grow? Most of the things that I've heard here can be applied to life.
You find both of this book still. The book is written to appeal to a wide range of human minds. This book is theological enough to confound a Brahmin priest in thought. This book is so intensely practical that it will appeal to a hard-headed businessman in thought. There's a paper in here that deals with aesthetics. I mildly wondered why it was ever written. But up in Chicago, there was an old professor of music who used to read this before it was published. He always asked for two papers, and the paper on aesthetics was only one. There's a paper in here on the physical aspect of the evolutionary universe. I've had people say, why did they ever publish that? There's an engineer, I know. This was the paper that was dealing with the most in the book.
Theo, you're talking about those papers that are coming in to get the next problem. Why don't we explain where Alexander
these revelations were completed in 1935,
isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And the book was published. The book was not published until 4 years ago. These papers were on hand in Chicago at one location and were not taken out. And you could go there and study them and read them. But it's only been 4 years that the book has been put together. The book.
paragraph 5 and 1 of the whole thing.
Well, let's just quickly run down these in one of them. The first great revelation, Bill, is the revelation made to the planetary prince when he came down here some 200,000 years ago. It's pretty well lost. The second one is what Adam did 37,000 years ago in the days of Eden. The third is the teachings of Melchizedek of Salem, who was of another order of local universe sonship. After the planetary rebellion, this planet went into receivership, and 12 Melchizedek sons, seniors to the Lamanidex, took over. And they knew good and well that Michael, that Christ was coming here. But they looked down and they the earlier revelations were just plain dying out. And so they appealed to their superiors in universe government. What do we do? And the only answer they got back was, the planet is in your charge. And so one of these Melchizedek volunteered to do something that's very rare. That's only six other times in local universe history. He volunteered to personalize the flesh and blood creature. And they can produce bodies by fissure. The only catch is they're non-reproducing bodies. But otherwise, they're mortal. They're long lives because they're so very skillful. They can set cells like a bird and set types. They invested this Melchizedek with such a body. And it is very touching. It describes you walked into a sheepherder's tent one day and said, I'm Melchizedek, priest of Elion, the Most High God. And that night, for the first time, he ate material food. And so what we're going to read. This is the Melchizedek who was without father, without mother, without beginning or ending of days. And the author of Hebrews had an access to an unexpurgated version of Genesis. When they rewrote the Old Testament in Babylon to build up Hebrew nationalism, they cut out everything about Melchizedek, except when he went out to welcome Abraham home from the victory over Shiloh.
Do you think there's anything significant to the fact that Hebrews, the book of Hebrews, is the only book that begins with the word God?
I don't know. I didn't realize that. Melchizedek laid the foundation, and it says the Jews were not a chosen people, but Abraham was a chosen individual. Melchizedek lived here for 92 years. I went to wake him up one morning and he was gone. But he planted the seed of truth. His main concept was that God is a person, is a being you can trust. And if you can trust God, you can't love him. That was his great message. And it's persisted longest among the Kenites. And, you should read the story of Yahweh, God of the Hebrews in here.
Are the papers of Urantia somewhat correlated to the Bible?
Yes and no. For example, they make the statement there never were 12 tribes in Israel, which is why you can't find them in any tribes. There was Judah, Ephraim, and a couple of small ones. The papers, for example, they'll go through the Old Testament and give you the secular history of the Jewish people and tell you how the Old Testament came to be and how it happened. Fascinating. Utterly fascinating. They point out the great struggle was during the captivity between the forces of nationalism and Deutero Isaiah, who spoke for the internationalist concept of Yahweh, and the nationalists won, unfortunately.
The same thing took place later in a smaller way between Peter and Paul.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, in winning, they made it impossible for the Jewish people to accept Jesus. Because he had to sit on David's throne. But as they say, they so admired Deutero Isaiah's writings that they didn't flip him from the canon. Neither is this affirmative. Well, going on, the fourth revelation, if you flip the page, 3, 4, and 5, we're going on.
You see, I can buy these five things because I have always believed in a an increasing knowledge of the Father.
Yeah.
All,
it's got to be
always,
that.
Yes.
It's got to be
you can't understand the Bible without it.
That's right. I like the sophistication of this text when I said this is not a finished text. Someday it'll be out there.
Commissioned to do this because I represent the highest source of authority available on the planet.
that many times I have enjoyed the pleasure of a soldier in the personal presence of the United States. I portray his nature and attributes with unchallengeable authority. I know where I speak. In another paper, he says, concerning this area, we only know what we've been told. No other reason. They're so funny. They lay it on the line when they've experienced, and when they are dependent on what God has told them, they say, no, this is what we've been told. Or they say, we don't know about the future, but you might like to join us in speculation. This is nothing to deal with. But here are the facts that we exist. First of all, offenders are moving inward, mobilizing all the tremendous vast resources of evolutionary experience made in partnership with God. And way out yonder, not looking in towards the open way, but in the opposite direction, is a tremendous physical universe winding up. Uninhabited, unpeopled. Yeah, there are power control creatures out there. We can measure the mind pressure going out. No spirit pressure. Plenty of physical gravity systems. And they said, we couldn't be criticized if we assume that there is a connection between the physical mobilization on the one hand and the spiritual experiential mobilization on the other. And we predict that you people are going out there. And this is why you're being trained in universe administration.
Your answer, believe, does it in reincarnation?
No. Your answer believes in what they're trying to get at in reincarnation, completion of unfinished business, or what the Catholics had in purgatory, the clean out the fire and brimstone, but progressive growth. But it's a straight line between here and God, stopping at the many mansions in our Father's house. There's more than one heaven.
Well, I think that we really are reincarnated on
first night. Yes, but reincarnation assumes you come back.
Yeah,
that's
what
you
know. That's what we
all the
coming back
here. But
I can't help but have the feeling that I'm disrupting your lesson.
Listen to this, Bill. There's a definite and divine purpose in all this scheme of mortal progression. This elaborate universe training school for ascending creatures. It is the design of the Creator to afford the creatures of time a graduated opportunity to master the details of the operation and administration.
Creator.
Yes. There's more of them. Yes. God has many sons. It is the design of the Creator to, when you see the magnitude of the universe, you realize what it says. This universe contemplates, Bill, the sometime appearance of 7 trillion worlds like this. There's about 5 trillion of them now.
I think you must clear that.
Well, let's go on for just a second. It is the design of the Creator to afford the creatures of time a graduated opportunity to master the details of the operation and administration of the grand universe. And that long course of training is best carried forward by having the surviving mortal climb up gradually and by actual participation in every step of the ascent. The mortal survival plan has a practical and serviceable objective. You are not the recipients of all this divine labor and painstaking training, only that you may survive just to enjoy endless bliss and eternal ease. There is a goal of transcendent service concealed beyond the horizon of the present universe age. If the gods designed merely to take you on one long and eternal joy excursion, they certainly would not so largely turn the whole universe into one vast and intricate and practical training school, requisition a substantial part of the celestial creation as your teachers and instructors, and then spend ages upon ages piloting you one by one through this gigantic universe school of experiential training. The furtherance of the scheme of mortal progression seems to be one of the chief businesses of the present organized universe, and the majority of innumerable orders of created intelligences are either directly or indirectly engaged in advancing some phase of this progressive perfection plan. In traversing the ascending scale of living existence from mortal man to the deity embrace, you actually
embraces all that can be, now can be, encompasses everything presently possible to the living orders of intelligent, perfected, finite creature beings. Is the future destiny of the paradise finality is service in new universes now in the making. It is assured that in this new and future creation, there will be no created orders of experiential beings whose lives will be wholly different from those which mortals have lived on some world as a part of their ascending training, as one of the stages of their age-long progress from animal to angel, and from angel to spirit, and from spirit to God. The spirit of this thing, Bill, is in the introduction of the first paper. From the universal Father who inhabits eternity, there has gone forth the supreme mandate, be you perfect even as I am perfect. In love and mercy, the messengers of paradise have carried this divine exhortation down through the ages and out through the universe, even to such lowly animal origin creatures as the human race is in your hands. This magnificent and universal injunction to strive for the attainment of the perfection of divinity is the first duty and should be the highest ambition of all the struggling creature creation of the God of perfection. This possibility of the attainment of divine perfection is the final and certain destiny of all man's eternal spiritual progress. Then they go on and say, you're not going to be perfect as God is, but as a creature within your limitations.
I have said this for years, not in pretty a language, or deeply, but the whole idea of progression.
Isn't that wonderful?
And I've often said that if you have to put your finger on the one job of a human being, it is to grow into what God intended him to be when he thought of him first.
There's a sentence there, Bill, that intrigues me. Havona is a good term. It's the universe which God personally made. It's not evolutionary. It's the universe we long for in spirit.
Heaven?
It's the eternal universe, not the time-space universe. It's at the center of all things. And it is a creation of flawless perfection. This is the universe which God's creator sons are trying to duplicate out here in time and space by the evolutionary method. And as they say, the ability to comprehend is a mortal passport to paradise. Because you can understand, you cannot meet God.
God makes me aware.
Yes. Willingness to believe is the key to Havona. The acceptance of sonship is the price of evolutionary survival.
What is that? Where is that?
Thank you, Mandy. And Bill,
what paragraph?
Last paragraph. Here is what we're like when we hit Havana. As they say, when we for the first time find out what is really going to work, we graduated from time and space. Long before reaching Havana, the ascendant children of time have learned to feast upon uncertainty, to fatten upon disappointment, to enthuse over apparent defeat, to invigorate in the presence of difficulties, to exhibit indomitable courage in the face of immensity, and to exercise unconquerable faith when confronted with a challenge of inexplicable. Long since the battle cry of these pilgrims became, in liaison with God, nothing. Absolutely nothing is impossible.
What
the next page? 291.
What the
paragraph 1, 2, 3. 291.
But we've always been doing those things too, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. As the papers present this bill to give a rough thumbnail of particular cosmology. They tell us that God is personally resident at the center of all things. And there's a place there. It's all paradise. It's the only thing outside of time and space. The only motionless reality in the whole cosmos. They said if you had to meet
to command the transport, you could go there. It takes a long time to go away from there. Physical. But it wouldn't do you any good because your sensory mechanism wouldn't work if you got there. And you wouldn't know you were there. You've got to do it. We've got to do it early. Before we have the protectiveness which will enable us to achieve a minimal recognition of the personalities of us. And they have some exposures and some at least they think we've got an offer to support the transportation. Because not everybody makes it the first time. They always make it the second. And it says the apparent failures of time are never easy to the significant delays of eternity.
That goes back to what this historian said, that what he had learned from all of history, who was it? And one of them is that the hills and the gods grind slowly, slowly, but they grind exceedingly small. The four of them are tremendous and follow that exactly.
Yeah. Well, surrounding paradise is what they speak of as the central universe of eternity. This universe has no beginning in time. It's an eternal creation. There are 1 billion spheres in this universe. They're inhabited. This is the patterned universe. Out here in time and space, there are 700,000 duplications of this patterned universe being attempted by the Creator Sons of God. There are 700,000 of these Creator Sons. Each of these local universes will someday contain 10 million inhabited worlds.
May you sometimes be, according to this, a creator?
You may not. These beings are of direct origin in the Father and the Son.
You do believe that in one way we are all sons of God?
Oh, yes. But we're creatures of, not creators of
God.
These beings are creators. They embody the divinity of the Father and the divinity of the Son. In time and space. They are the union, they are produced by the union of 2 identical concepts of purity in the first and second persons of being. As they say, Christ is a creator son. Technically, he is not a member of the Paradise Trinity, but spiritually, they said, don't differentiate from the eternal son. Spiritually, divinely, he is all that the eternal son would have been. As the eternal son come to this world.
Melchizedek is
a creature son. He is one of the sons of this creator son, as is Lucifer. The creator of Melchizedek is Michael, Christ Michael, not the universal father. Michael is of the paradise order of sonship. Melchizedek of the local universe order of sonship. Melchizedek was born in time and space. He has an origin. the adventure of these creator sons coming out here by the evolutionary technique, which means working in time, attempting to duplicate what their father did in eternity, is one of the great stories in this book. As they say, they're undoubtedly destined to go on out into outer space. As they depict this,
getting down to where we are now,
right,
with this concept, the H bomb doesn't make very much difference.
It doesn't, from the standpoint of the human race, no. It might be the end of America, yes.
Or of the Earth?
No, not of the Earth. I'll gamble it. They tell us, I'm instructed for this book, there are only 2 things of supreme value on an inhabited world. The individual human being and the human race. All other values are relative. The human race will not come to an end on this world. Civilizationally, they don't regard that as a supreme value. The United States of America is not a supreme value. It's a means to an end. You and I, they don't particularly care, Bill, whether we live out our days or check in tomorrow. Continuation. This is from an eternal standpoint, not too important. How long do we live? Because we go on.
That origin is a whole way of parting as individuals. We're not like
one of the great mistakes.
What was your explanation when I said this about the East Bomb? You said something.
Definitely.
The
we'll go on.
is a fair to say, so God's knowing kingdom believer, what does it matter if all things are so trash? That's true. In your relationship to God.
Do you think this is what Jesus meant when he said, I have overcome the world?
Yeah. I think the greatest illustration of this is the puzzlement which plagued the followers of John the Baptist when they observed that Jesus did nothing that he had done. And Jesus was not callous. He simply saw John's death in perspective. He knew where John was going and what awaited John. And whether John lived a few days, a few weeks, or a few months, or a few years, was quite immaterial.
John had fulfilled. What did you do was in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
That's the eternal Son, the second person of the
Trinity. I thought that was
yes. And in spirit, any creator son is the same as the eternal Son. For example, there's another order of paradise, sonship. You see, there's an awful lot of inhabited worlds. And each world is sooner or later visited by a paradise son who is born, lives, and dies, as Jesus did here. And the purpose of that is to release the spirit of the Son, the Comforter, the spirit of truth, which makes human minds universally indwellable by God's spirit. This is the spiritually accepted. Most of these sons who do this are not creators. They are magisterial sons. They are not of origin in the first and second person of deity. They are of origin in the second and the third person of deity.
Does your answer teach that we have only had one in this world?
One paradise son, yes. Right. Christ being here, this happens only once in each local universe.
What would they do with Gautama Buddha?
He's a great teacher, as Moses is. They equate him to Moses, but not to Christ.
Or as Abraham.
They compare Abraham to Lao Tzu, or Confucius. They're very even-handed in their teaching and their analysis of human spirit and religion. They give them all credit. From an animal to an old group of men who founded the six religions. These are all wise men, God-knowing men.
What would they do about a contemporary like Schweitzer?
They don't mention
him. No, but...
I don't know. I don't know if you're interested.
I mean, I think he's the greatest living man in the world today.
He's a very great man.
Couldn't he be a creature son?
No.
Why not?
Well, these are superhuman beings, Phil. These are not mortal beings. Either.
The creature sons are superhuman, too?
They're paradise sons. They're origin.
I'm not saying creators.
They're not creators, but they're superhuman beings of origin in God. They just don't create. These are the folks that tend to bestow themselves on these other worlds. Creators sons are the only ones in the local universe.
Well, then why couldn't a Schweitzer or a Gandhi be a creature son?
Because he never says he was being made in God.
We're
in trouble on semantics. What I'm saying is a paradise son who's not a creator. We're not paradise sons, we're human sons. These are origin of paradise.
And you don't think it's possible that maybe a man who attains and goes to the place where Albert Schweitzer does. Have you ever heard him?
Yes.
I went to Aspen, Colorado.
Yes, I've read him.
Centennial. Mm-hmm. He was speaking through an interpreter, and I tell you, never before in this, my experience, nor never again, do I expect to hear a man and every single person reacted this way. Mm-hmm. They felt they were listening to God speak. It was the most awe-inspiring thing I ever heard, and he was doing it by interpreter. Mm-hmm.
That's very important. These are wise men, Bill. These are wise men. But if a paradise son, when a paradise son, not a creator, is born and performs the mission of a soul son, as he begins the revelation of God to his human contemporaries, he says, he who has seen me has the family does.
Your gradation goes from the Father,
yes,
to the Creator Son,
yes,
to the Creature Son,
no, to the
Paradise Son,
then
the Creature Son?
No. But we might as well clean this up now. We're in theology now.
Yeah.
My gradation goes the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit, the members of the Trinity. Beings of absolute status who also can function as finite, in a finite relationship. They have many beings who are of origin on paradise, of origin in deity. Some are creators, some are not. They're administrators. The Son led in the Trinity, you are magistrates. And this is how they earn their right to sit in judgment on human survival. They live the life of human beings and demonstrate their right.
You got to
ask. That's who?
That's what I'm asking you.
We never had one here.
Oh.
We are creators, son, instead of a magisterial son.
I see.
Disruptive and destructive in the pre-settled eras of that very realm. You can give liberty to a 30-year-old that could hardly be anything but abused by a 13-year-old. And when a 13-year-old wants the liberties of a 30-year-old, if you give it to him, you're sowing the seeds of destruction in that child's life.
I think this is correct, yes.
It's purely a matter of cultural level.
They're not going to do it by insult.
No, there would be nothing special.
Yes, I do.
No, I get coffee right here.
I'm told by my parents that this country was slowly drying up. The idea was plant the amendment on the American populace. In my first year in prep school, no one drank. In my last year, no one who amounted to anything did. The net result has been that for the first time, criminals became possessed of millions of dollars. It didn't work, did it? Alright. You have the same problem when you try to go too fast in any direction. You cannot move too far in advance of human attitude. The problem with Negro integration is cultural in large measure.
Well, I was only
It's not uncomplicated by race. But here, I was talking to a pal of mine. We happened to come to our Perry in Toledo discussing this over a good dry martini. And I said, boy, let's say we had a choice of having dinner tonight between a Negro college graduate or a certified blue-eyed blonde Aryan who is a cobbler in one of the steel mills in Pittsburgh. Who would you pick? He said, the Negro, of course. And I said, why? He said, we had nothing to talk about with the other fellow.
Problem
is human emotion. There are enough educated Negroes who feel bitter. But now they're going to do a little pushing.
They're with human beings. They're human beings, you know. And they're not going to be wise.
Of course, they've learned it from others.
What is it they say, M? AACP?
NAACP.
One of the fellows told me down south and stuff, you know, he says, niggers ain't acting like colored people.
Your county road contract, but your family isn't in jeopardy.
We trust each other. We've earned that trust. You can't speak that as a human head. We take it as a matter of course. Fidel Castro is having a little fun after the pizza in Cuba. And that's a good example that this is not something that everybody has just by birth. The American people have earned it. And Shelton, not in the Constitution, would make me do it. Cuba doesn't have a Constitution, so does Nicaragua. So does France. Man even qualifies himself for the restraining garments of mercy when he dares to love his fellow men. While he achieves the beginnings of spiritual brotherhood when he elects to mete out to them that treatment which he himself would be accorded. Even that treatment which he conceives that God would accord. Isn't that an interesting introduction of Jesus to levels of ethics? Love your neighbor as yourself, the lower level. If you will love men as I have loved you, the higher level. An automatic universe reaction is stable and in some form continuing in the cosmos. A personality who knows God and desires to do his will, who has spirit insight, is divinely stable and eternally existent. Man's great universe adventure consists in the transit of his mortal mind from the stability of mechanical static to the divinity of spiritual dynamics. And he achieves this transformation by the force and constancy of his own personality decision. In each of life's situations declared, it is my will that your will be done. Interestingly, they put it positively here, don't they? It is my will that your will be done. I like that better than not my will, but your will. I think it's the only time it's stated positively in the whole book.
You read last night, back in Christ, that he was controlled enthusiasm.
Yes.
I heard that many years ago and started to try to find what it was, but I understood more of last night than I ever read. We were discussing this going home the first time I had this experience.
He's got a good job, though. Right. He sure is. Man that used this
home.
This whole hanging of this paper is a discussion of the universe mechanism. Time and space as mechanisms controlling man. Let me ask you, why are we not moving about atomic energy? Because we've broken down these restraints faster than we've imposed internal restraints, right? We feel a little bit naked and a little bit scared, right? This is the time as it should be today. The best definition of ideal is, that I've run into, is a navigator uses the stars to steer by. But if he doesn't, he's a poor navigator. But only a fool would try to steer into the stars from the sea. To me, ideals are inspiration. They're like the life of Jesus. I can't be Jesus. The one thing I don't want to be, I want to get married. Children. This is not a slavish copy of his life. His life is not designed to be a blueprint to me. His life is designed to be an inspiration to me. To copy his life in principle, not be so. He never said,
to his apostles, you boys must now all be carpenters, you must remain celibate, you must have so many brothers and sisters, you must lose your father when you're 13. No, he merely said that you would love men as I have loved you. That's all he wants. This is the inspiration. This is the emulation in principle. But how foolish to try to do it in detail. You know, if I came down here with sandals and a toga, this would be quiet, wouldn't it? That's copying in detail.
Copying
the quiet print. Of course. It's an inspiration, not a blueprint. You know, you're only getting around for a copy of the In Southern California, I can probably get it started in a hurry. Definitely. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's it.
This is a man who is associated with the church on Sunday, and he's tied in, with quite a bit of money here, through Frank Preston, KJ Lloyd, a couple others, and it's something that they, by electronics, have superseded gravity. Now, a very intelligent and solid PhD in my constitution said they did the same thing up in Maryland for heaven's sake, watch this for me. Now Carr was there, the Carr is the inventor. In December of 1959, they say they have a chance to go to the moon. Now he has a lot of material, and he's a very serious chap. He gave me a bunch of material, which, by the way, doesn't make 100% that this makes a difference. Yeah. Have you ever heard of him?
There's a Gravity Institute in Philadelphia.
You put up a question on this thing of who gets something out of it.
Yeah.
Well, I find this free of that, but I do not find this other free of that as much
this
as that.
This arouses my normal human suspicion.
Yeah.
You talk about practicality, Bill. You have to get out of here pretty quick.
Yeah.
Can you stand a couple of paragraphs?
Yeah.
All right.
I can leave in 10 minutes.
All right. They're discussing some of the fraternal contacts we have with angels. In the next place we go right after we leave here.
That's another world.
Another world, another place. These angels are all in the chain of recorders, extending from the lowest to the highest to fill you with the facts of time and the truths of eternity. Someday, they will teach you to seek truth as well as fact, to expand your soul as well as your mind. Even now you should learn to water the garden of your heart as well as to seek for the dry sands of knowledge. Forms are valueless when lessons are learned. No chick may be had without the shell, and no shell is of any worth after the chick is hatched. But sometimes error is so great that its rectification by revelation would be fatal to those slowly emerging truths which are essential to its experiential overthrow. When children have their ideals, do not dislodge them. And while you are learning to think as men, you should also be learning to pray as children. Law is life itself, and not the rules of its conduct. Evil is a transgression of law, not a violation of the rules of conduct pertaining to life, which is the law. Falsehood is not a matter of narration technique, but something premeditated as the perversion of truth. The creation of new pictures out of old facts. The restatement of parental life and the lives of offspring. These are the artistic triumphs of truth. The shadow of a hair's turning premeditated for an untrue purpose. The slightest twisting or perversion of that which is principle. These substitute falsehood. But the fetish of factualized truth, fossilized truth, the iron band of so-called unchanging truth, holds one blindly in a closed circle of cold fact. One can be technically right as to fact and everlastingly wrong in the truth. And on the next page it says, the argumentative defense of any proposition is inversely proportional to the truth contained. Isn't that important? Now, I always remember that the argumentative defense of any proposition is inversely proportional to the truth contained. Jesus never said, you shall know the facts, and the facts shall make you say
nothing. Of course, I tell you, one of your biggest drawbacks, it seems to me, in this whole presentation, is the fact that with something, as long as Jesus just does, you have to go up against the people's first thinking. So many crackpot philosophies.
I know no way out of it. I don't know where to escape that dilemma.
No, I don't either.
We have to live it then.
Well, of course, if it's truth, it will triumph.
Yeah.
But I have some men, for instance, who go for, what do they call it? Destiny.
Yes.
Have you heard of this?
Vaguely.
You wouldn't want to go any farther. and by the way, they're pretty intelligent men.
They're hungry people.
But it appeals to their prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, it specializes in hating the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, this stuff is just anathema to me. And, very frankly, when Mr. and Mrs. Baker first mentioned it to me, I thought to myself that it's more of a destiny.
Yeah. So I'll tell you our experience with it. I hope you'll bear me out. in the beginning, the acceptance of this book depends a great deal on what you think of the person who tells you about it. Now, pretty soon the book stands on its own feet. But I'm very conscious that in the beginning, if somebody was sending blood pressure to form the blood, look at it. But the average stuff, you know, liberates the inner forces that slumber within you.
Yeah.
I read that and go right in the wastebasket. I didn't get time. Now, if somebody could tell English on it to me, but Bill, this I think is terrific. I'd read it.
Uh-huh.
At least give it a good fair chance. But if it just came cold, this could file these facts. I'm in a hurry. And I could misprove that way, too.
Well, seems to me that's one of your great problems, but I don't know anything that can be done about it.
It's got to be personal. It's got to be hand-to-hand, mouth-to-mouth. Of
course, people. Another thing is that there are so few people who can express themselves as well as you can.
Thank you.
Who believe in your answer just as much as you do, but are unable to transmit that to
a
skeptical person.
We'll get more.
Oh, yes.
Listen, Bill, as I look at this, the fields are not white under the harvest, by any means. This is the time for the accumulation of food corn. This thing, I think, is going to hit when I've been dead about 50 years. But that's all right. I just go back to one end of the season season. It took it a while to catch all of the Greco-Roman world. I've benefited from that harvest, and I didn't sow, so I should be willing to sow here where I don't have a chance of reaping my gains.
You write the book also, because
there
are skeptics with your back to the wall and say, how do you know all this? Since you say to them very kindly, I know because I know.
Well, you know I don't know.
especially if you're God.
Because if they take that hook, they just say, I believe you don't know. And they are now feeling the belief.
Now,
you've got them cold. That's the only unanswerable argument about God, I think.
Of course, I think maybe, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but I think in a way I disagree with what I have heard, at least, in the way of application. If this is true, then should it not, by people like you who believe in it, be terminated within churches? Can't you do this better from within than from without?
Wasn't it hurtful? Why not move in every direction?
I have found a little tendency, I think, on the part of most of the people to want to come together within just this, within your own classes, which I think is good, but a tendency not to disseminate it from within the church.
Well,
first, if you told me, you don't go to church.
Well, I never have.
I know.
This is my discipline and background.
All right.
I was raised by two very Christian MDs.
All right. My point is that couldn't a person of your intellect and heart and mind and spirit from within a church do a tremendous amount of seed corn?
Sure. But I move around all the time, Bill. It's my job. I'm a mobile unit.
No.
I'm in Chicago at best almost 6 or 7 days a month.
But as long as you're in time and space, you're somewhere on something.
Sure.
And it does seem to me that in any city in which you may be,
mm-hmm.
there is some church that could be helped to grow tremendously if this is true.
Can
you from the inside,
your inquisitive, which is good. Now, in our experience, I've been associated with this book for 3 years. We find that they have to be ready for this, or they won't accept it. Now, if a person is in church and they're satisfied in the position they're in the church, they're no good for us. Now, if the religion or what they get in church isn't satisfying their spiritual appetite, they want to go a little further, as I did, and start to search and become a little closer to God. This is the picture.
In other words, you're saying that a lot of them that are in the church are dormant right there.
Well, they're satisfied with the position.
Basically, in my thinking along that line, is that the church member who is satisfied is dead.
Well, he's satisfied in the position he's in. He thinks he's a good Christian. He goes and listens to the sermon. He makes his contribution. They're active in the different committees, and they enjoy the fellowship, and that's their religion, and they don't care to go anywhere.
But this is one of the main jobs of the church, to stimulate within individuals a thirst for truth, for continual growth.
That's where we come in.
Should be one of the main jobs. Yes, where we come in. I'll tell you what's been done, Bill. The thing called the Rancho Brotherhood has been organized. It's a congregational sort of a thing. It's not a church. It's social. I define it as the social organization of the religious objective. It has no hierarchy. It has no ecclesiastical authority. I have one president of it. And I have all plenty of administrative authority, period. I just talked to a constitution part. I was president. not archbishop, you know?
No, no.
And,
with our churches, for instance, and the congregational churches, they're on the same system.
Now, our purpose in organizing this, and I helped write that constitution, was the sad review of history. If we don't provide a harmless organization, maybe a pernicious one will grow up. One of the cardinal articles in the Constitution is that membership in any church, religious, or fraternal association shall not be a bar to membership in this brotherhood. This brotherhood has no theological, ecclesiastical objections. The big folks right now are learning this book. They're sophomores still.
No, right.
You're not freshmen, but you're not juniors or seniors yet. What I'm trying to do is to help promote the development of teachers in this book. I'm sure that all of you are not going to teach it, but I'm equally sure that some of you are. I'm trying to mobilize teachers for them, so where the cord goes, I don't know, except there was a story about a sower who went forth to sow, and I suspect the result is going to vary due to circumstances beyond our control.
No.
I'm interested in training teachers. What happens after that? Frankly, I don't expect to be around to see. I won't be here. I'll love these sports.
If you have to have a pretty good knowledge of this book in order to answer some questions, but they answer a lot of questions.
You wait down there and ask those others, because I knew you would, and I knew I might.
No, I'm wrong. I read this kind of thing. I don't know if I'm working 30 or 59. I've had to exit all the way over. And what's more, my mind works along the channel, but I suspect I got aptitude for it, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
And all I know to do is do what I can do. So that's fine. I'll get out to California, I'll get into Chicago, I'll get out to Connecticut. It just happens that my business takes me all over. And so I take advantage of that.
I still say, because I have not read it,
if this is true, then is this not possible? And has this occurred to any of you? You know and I know that the church is not getting the job done today.
Right.
Is it not possible, if this is true, that this could be the terminating influence within the church that would make it get the job done as it was intended to?
Bill, before you go, the light
comes. Bill
Alexander.
Hi, Bill. He's married.
Hey, he's
married. He's married.
Rather, Bill.
Now,
if you're still interested in,
you
and in I know your eyes are bothering me a great deal,
yes.
About the eternal Son and the creative Son, if you look up Hebrews 6 and 21, you get this story.
Hebrews 6 and 21.
Hebrews
6 and 21, Hebrews 21, you get to it. Hello, Will. Thank you very much. They don't subtract them. I believe this. Meeting you soon.
Real.
Thank you a lot.
Hopefully,
we'll you can get back. On the cream.
You probably will.
I will tell you when I get home and I'm going.
Okay.
Very nice to see you, Bill.
You'll be back to
see me,
Bill.
I told your wife that I knew you, Don, but I didn't know that you'd arrive. Good to see you. Evolutionary science. You will
observe in this paper that no one can explain why. Lucifer, Brazil. They're theorizing, but they do not know where these ideas came from. The union of days, the faithful of days on redemption, has no illusion. For over 100 years before the outbreak of the rebellion, he's been sending an intelligence report that all was not well. They knew trouble was brewing. But trouble can brew and it doesn't always have to break out. You'll recall that one of the qualifications of a mighty messenger is that he be rebellion tested. Does this mean that a rebellion always has to break out? The answer is no. It counts for even more if you can prevent a rebellion, if you can talk somebody out of it. I think the story of Lucifer presents a beautiful illustration of the difference between evil and sin. We're on page 601. When Lucifer started out, Lucifer had done a job of rationalizing, or what we sometimes refer to as an internal snow job. He had sold himself a bill of goods that what he was going to do was for the good of the system, if not for the good of the universe. He felt his system had been put upon. Lucifer wanted to set up an autonomous system. He wanted to have concentrated authority in the system. Now, these objectives are not evil. If you look ahead just a few pages, to page 632, when an entire local system is settled in light and life, it becomes personally self-serving. Such a system of inhabited worlds becomes personally self-governing. The system legislative assemblies constituted on the headquarters world. Courts are now established. These are the things which Lucifer wanted in his day as today. He has executive authority, but no power of legislation, no judicial authority. Legislative authority is on the constellation, judicial authority is at the universe headquarters. You can't say that his objective is bad, can you? Because this is exactly what was ahead of him, or ahead of this system had he been taken. Again, in the third, the constellation stage, over the next page, first paragraph after chapter 9, during this next stage, many constellation and universe activities are transferred to the system captain. As nearly as I can deduce, Lucifer was trying to see that which he would have gotten in due course anyway. Now, let's say that I want to be a philanthropist, and I want to give away considerable sums of money. I don't have the money, but I want to do good. So what do? I knock somebody over the head and take the money away from them, and then I'm a philanthropist. Is this philanthropy? No. First, I could earn the money, didn't I? And if I have the ability to earn the money, then perhaps I have the judgment to give it away wisely. This is an exact parallel. Lucifer wanted a short circuit thing. I can see nothing wrong with his objectives and what he wanted to do with the system government, because two papers later I read that this is going to happen. Calgastia, here on Earth, proclaimed himself planetary sovereign. When our world is settled in light and life, whoever is the planetary prince will be proclaimed planetary sovereign. The boss. Why did Lucifer rebel? I don't know. Why did Judas fail to love Jesus? I don't know. But that's the one respect in which Judas differed from his 11 associates. In every other respect, there were parallels, overlaps, similarities. The obvious person didn't understand him most of the time. But they loved him.
Yeah, he never wrote the paper,
though,
right?
Mm-hmm.
He
was
saying
that he showed up to
the type of
child
that he
had gone
through.
Yeah. How about Lucifer's settled? Lucifer was raised just like all the little non-bigs were raised. Does the rebellion mean that the Lamanites always followed? Well, Satan followed Lucifer. But in what his problem was probably the second rebellion. Lanaport was the assistant system sergeant. And he catched the same guy in that system that Satan held in this system. And when his chief rebelled, he told him to go roll it up. He remained absolutely loyal to the universe authority. The present Lucifer's successor is a rebellion testament on
it.
It's individual free will. As the papers point out here, we've been discussing the planetary rebellion. Brennan Calgary joined in with Lucifer. Amadeus, who from a cosmic standpoint, in terms of education, didn't know his next one very late. Was loyal as the victim. Ah, we get the answer. He couldn't be too smart. How about Van? He was smart and he was loyal too. You cannot write a formula. It's the alchemy of choice. And you're right up against what they say about personality, one of the unsolved mysteries of the universe of the universe. I think this, I think in situations many times, you don't make a decision. You find that you have made one. This I have found. I have looked at the situation and have discovered that a decision is in existence. I just didn't know it was there before. And this reason I'm pretty sure of. These are 10 to follow. If people agree with me, they call it courage. If they disagree with me, they call it stubbornness. All depends on who's up. Lucifer was critical. Does that mean that if you're a critic, you're foredoomed? I don't think so. Criticism is a symptom. It can be constructive as well as negative or destructive. He was an individualist, so shall I guess. But then, Nathaniel was an individualist, too. He wasn't a conformist. Thomas was hard to get along with. Remember when he joined up his wife, he heaved a sigh of relief for the thanks and ordered to be away from home all the time. That was her reaction to Thomas commissioning him to the apostle. Can you imagine anything more mercurial or inconstant than Simon Peter? No. And of course, Peter went through a very terrifying experience, having that almost forcibly removed from him, like he pulled a bad tooth. Andrew lacked enthusiasm. You can analyze up and down. There's just one thing wrong, and that is, his it didn't work. Lucifer accepted Michael as his father, but not as his sovereign. I would like to have had the chance to ask Lucifer, if where the hell did you think Michael came from? Was he spontaneously generated by impersonal forces on paradise? I mean, to me, that's the most vulnerable point.